Sonia was letting you know you can begin the meeting.
Okay, hold on. Let me get to my script. Okay, great. Okay, I'd like to call the Planning Commission work session to order for Thursday, May 16, 2024. My name is Carl Johnson. I'm the chairman of the Clark County Planning Commission. Before we begin tonight, I would like to announce that our Planning Commission work session are hybrid, both in person and via WebEx. For the virtual and in-person members of the Planning Commission and staff, that would be me, please ensure that your microphones are turned off and muted unless you're speaking. There will not be any public comment during this work session. Members of the public can watch or listen. This evening's agenda is planned as follows. We'll have a call to order, which we have already, and then we're going to be dealing with HB 1181 and climate change elements update. After that, there'll be comments from the members of the Planning Commission and then adjournment. Are there any questions? Okay, with that said, we can proceed. I don't think we need to take a roll, so that would be Jose and Jenna, you are up.
All right, good evening, everyone. For the record, my name is Jenna Kay with Community Planning, and I'm going to be the primary presenter on our presentation today about House Bill 1181 and the new required climate element for Clark County and its comprehensive plan. Let's go to the next slide. So our plan for the evening, first we want to give you a recap on where we're at in the comprehensive planning process, and then we'll provide an overview of this new piece of legislation and some of the requirements of the new climate element, and then we'd like to provide some updates on where we're at so far and look at the timeline for this work. Next slide. Okay, so this slide is our snapshot of the whole comprehensive planning process, and the check marks show tasks that have been completed to date. So I'm going to pass it to Oliver and Jose to give a brief update on the council hearing from last week.
This is Oliver Ojaka, Community Planning Director. For the record, the council held a hearing May 7th and took testimony, considered your recommendations, and after your hearing and recommendation, you know, county staff and city staff started deliberating and continuing to respond to the recommendation of the Planning Commission to Council. And I think you had three recommendations. One was to consider a hybrid, if I can, you know, paraphrase your recommendations, and also to look at the planning assumptions, I believe, from the City of Vancouver as it relates to their mixed use and density, and then also to consider job numbers as it relates to construction and other areas. So we followed your recommendation and, you know, deliberated with the cities and came to a point where the cities all agreed with the adjustment that was made to the employment, and also agreed on a hybrid between A and B, where we had a 50-50 split, everybody getting 50%, and then a 75-25% as suggested by the City of Commerce. So we walked through that, and I can, you know, say that not all the cities were enthusiastically in support of that, but they did finally agree that that be the recommendation we take to council. And the council, I will also say, struggled with that, but however did move forward with the hybrid option and the employment allocation as well as the population allocation. And that's what they passed unanimously on May 7th. Well, do you have anything else to add?
I wonder if you have that off the edge here. Not to share, but we're going to focus on that. But no, I don't think there's anything else, and we can take questions afterwards.
Okay, so with that decision last week, it means that all of the key tasks and project initiation are now done for the comprehensive plan. So we're moving fully into the next phase on shaping the plan. The other thing I just wanted to point out on this slide is I've circled two items on here regarding changes to the comprehensive plan text and policies. And I've circled those because the climate work that I'm going to talk about fits in there in the grand scheme of things, is that we're talking about updates to the comprehensive plan text when we're talking about this new climate legislation. Okay, let's go to the next slide. And then this slide is just here as a reminder too for the whole comp plan process, what we're planning for. So countywide, we're planning for almost 200,000 more people, and for new jobs, a little over 88,000 new jobs that we're planning for. Next slide. Okay, so let's shift to talking about this piece of legislation, House Bill 1181. So on May 3rd, 2023, House Bill 1181 was signed into law. So just about a year ago, this became law in the state of Washington. And this new climate legislation amends the State's Growth Management Act, as well as a few other state laws. The bill is really long. It's about 50 pages. I am going to highlight key pieces that relate to the comprehensive plan, but I am not covering every single thing in those 50 pages with y'all today. We also outlined some of those key items in issue paper 7, which was provided as one of your meeting materials for today. So at a really high level, House Bill 1181, one thing it does is it added a climate change and resiliency goal to the Growth Management Act. It also requires Clark County to add a climate element to its comprehensive plan. And this element has to have two components, a greenhouse gas reduction sub-element and a resilience sub-element. This legislation also added several new definitions into the Growth Management Act. And if you read through the legislation, there's a few other themes that stand out. One is the inclusion of environmental justice and the need to develop policies that do not harm our most overburdened community members and are benefiting those who are most vulnerable in our community to climate impacts. There are also requirements around use of best available science, and that term in state planning legislation is meaning what we do has to be scientifically credible. And the legislation also requires the State Department of Commerce to provide guidance to those of us in the local jurisdictions to follow in order to implement this new legislation. The county has to address this new climate goal and add a new climate element to the comprehensive plan by December 31st, 2025. So it gets folded into this comprehensive plan update. There are two links on this slide to two core documents for this project. The first is at the top of the slide and links to the legislation itself. So if you'd like to look at it, you can click on that link. The second link on here is to that guidance that the Department of Commerce created that we are following. I have printed copies of those documents if you would like them. They are large. So just let me know. If you would like them, we can pass those out to you. Okay, let's go to the next slide. Okay, so now I'm going to dig just a little bit deeper into those items that I just mentioned. So this slide is showing the 15 goals of the Growth Management Act. As the Growth Management Act is listed, none of these goals has a higher priority than the others. This new legislation added climate change and resiliency as a goal. So there used to be 14 goals. Now there are 15 because of this legislation. And if you read what the goal says for the climate change and resiliency goal, it says that comprehensive plans, development regulations, and regional plans must support state greenhouse gas emission reduction goals and per capita vehicle mile traveled reduction and foster resiliency to climate impacts and natural hazards. This legislation also amended the language of other goals, so transportation, open space and recreation, public participation, and shoreline management. That language was amended as well through this legislation. Let's go to the next slide. All right, so this slide is showing all of the elements in the county's comprehensive plan. So some elements are mandatory under the Growth Management Act. So land use, housing, capital facilities, utilities, rural, transportation, economic development, parks and recreation. Those are all examples of mandatory elements that have to be a part of the county's comprehensive plan. We also have some optional ones that don't have to be there, but over the years have been added. So this climate legislation added climate as a new mandatory element for us at the county. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that if you open the county's comprehensive plan, we've got a picture of the current version on this slide, each of our elements has its own chapter. So when we talk about a climate element, we're really talking about a new chapter that's going to be added into this document. Let's go to the next slide. Okay, and then on this slide, we're just showing the list of terms where new definitions were added into the Growth Management Act. So these had never been defined before or really mentioned in the Growth Management Act. So I'm not going to go into the definitions right now, but this gives you a flavor of some of what's being addressed for the first time. Let's go to the next slide. Okay, so that was the 10,000 foot look. I'm now going to dive a little bit deeper into what's going to be in this new climate element. So if we think of the climate element as a chapter in the comprehensive plan, the basic structure is that we're going to need to provide some background information. Then we're going to need to list countywide planning policies, and these are agreed upon policies between all of the city and county decision makers in the county to create consistency between each other's plans. So planning staff, we're gonna have to work with the other planners in the cities, and everyone's gonna work with their decision makers to figure out what the countywide planning policies are gonna be for this element. And then following those countywide planning policies, we have what are called 20-year county planning policies. And so these are the goals and actions that only apply to the unincorporated county. The actions the county is going to take over the next 20 years. Okay, next slide. Okay, so within this chapter, I mentioned there were two components. So I'm going to talk about greenhouse gas reduction first. So when we say greenhouse gases, we are talking about gases like carbon dioxide and methane and some other gases that trap the Earth's outgoing energy and thus help retain heat in the atmosphere. So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about greenhouse gases. So the requirements in the legislation are such that the county has to identify actions it's going to take over the next 20 years to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and reduce vehicle miles traveled, and we cannot increase emissions elsewhere in the state. So we can't shift the pollution to our neighbors. And there's also a requirement that these actions have to prioritize reducing pollution in a way that benefits overburdened communities to maximize the co-benefit of improving air pollution for them and improving environmental justice. Okay, let's go to the next slide. And then the resilience sub-element, when we're talking about resilience, this is being defined as the ongoing process of anticipating, preparing for, and adapting to changes in climate, and minimizing negative impacts to our natural systems, infrastructure, and communities. So for this sub-element, we need to identify, again, the actions the county is going to take over the next 20 years to equitably improve county resilience to the impacts of climate change. And the actions must identify, protect, and enhance natural areas to climate impacts, identify, protect, and enhance community resilience, including social, economic, and built environment factors consistent with environmental justice. We must address natural hazards created or aggravated by climate change, and we have to prioritize actions that benefit overburdened communities that will be disproportionately suffer from the compounding environmental impacts and natural hazards due to climate change. Okay, so those two slides summarize a lot of the key sort of requirements that are in that legislation that we need to figure out how to add into the comprehensive plan. Let's go to the next slide. Okay, before I keep going and shift to what we've done so far, maybe I'll pause and see if there are any questions at this point.
This is Commissioner Baker. So when we talk about reducing greenhouse gases, that means it's not like per capita greenhouse gases, it's like the amount of gases that we are currently emitting, and then we're going to add 25% population growth or something like that, and so our greenhouse gases can't go up that 25%. It has to stay at or below where we're at right now. Is that correct?
Yeah, we are supposed to be aligning with the state targets. So that means we are supposed to be helping the state get to net zero by 2050. So for the greenhouse gas emissions, it's not per capita. It's we need to figure out how to grow while reducing emissions, essentially. But the vehicle miles traveled is per capita.
Okay.
But if the
vehicle miles driven, like if we have 25% more people and we're driving a less amount of miles, we're still going to be emitting more gases. And so it's really a burden upon us to try to plan on how to really reduce the amount of miles driven. Is that like per person? Like, do we have a number where what we're driving? I don't know. I know it's new in the process, but like, do we know how many miles people are driving right now? And do we have an idea of what would we need to do to reduce, if we had 25% more people, what would we need to do to reduce, what miles per drive per person do we have to get to?
Yeah, so we are getting there. So we will be able to share that data. WASHDOT is supposed to now start reporting vehicle mile travel data on an annual basis to us. So that is the process we have to figure out to doing what you're saying, basically. Yeah.
Okay, those my two questions for that segment. Thank you.
This is Eldon. Could you give me an example in Clark County what an overburdened community would be?
Yeah, this term is defined in the legislation, so I'm going to paraphrase. But it's basically an area in our community where there are cumulative health impacts. So basically, the health outcomes are expected to be worse in that community than in other places in our county. So for instance, a lot of communities of color and communities with lower income, there's a lot of data that shows that they're going to have worse outcomes, let's say during a heat wave, than other areas of our community that might be wealthier and have fewer people of color. So it's it comes out of the public health realm, that definition, and is based on cumulative health impacts. So that's not specifically, I'm not pointing to a point in the, you know, in the county, but we do have, we've started to do some mapping to start looking at where those areas are.
This is Commissioner Haroon. I guess, well, first thing, it's hard to understand you with a mask on. That was kind of my trying to like nail down of kind of the definitions of like resilience feels a little squishy to me as far as like how do we measure that? And I did have a question on, so I guess that'd be my first part of that. And then on the vehicle miles traveled, I wasn't sure like how that's being captured when I have met some people that are moving up the I-5 corridor, actually specifically like they had just bought a home in Winlock and they're commuting into Battleground from Winlock because of the affordability. And so they're driving each way. And so are we going to be able to capture like people that are working in the county but are moving up the I-5 corridor? Because I know that's where a lot of like the developer investment is chasing up the I-5 corridor, because that's where our affordable housing is going to be placed and not in the county. So how does that, but it will dramatically affect vehicle miles traveled. And how are we capturing that?
Yeah, so we haven't gotten too far along yet in looking at the VMT data yet. I know at first glance, our transportation planners have shared that it's not, what WSDOT's providing is not as detailed as we would like to really understand what's, you know, going on. But I think my understanding is at this point, right, that people passing through will contribute to our vehicle miles traveled. So it will end up, I'm not sure what we're going to do about it, right, or anything like that, but it will affect, you know, whether you're living in it, traveling through the county for work, passing through to go to another county, it will end up in the data, you know, that we end up tracking over time.
And so I guess along the community resiliency, what's the metrics that we're looking at when I hear that? It feels very squishy to me.
Yeah.
What are the metrics on that?
And I would say, I think it is squishier than the greenhouse gas side of this. So we will need to define some goals that we're aiming for. But the legislation it's saying we have to do better. It's not really saying a whole lot more in terms of what the target should be. So that's something that we will basically propose, you know, here are some goals we'll aim for, and here's some policies and actions to help us get there. But you are picking up on that it's not very clearly defined.
Jenna, this is Commissioner Brookfield. On the transportation, are there any, you alluded to the fact that you've been tracking something kind of as a entry level shot. Could you explain a little bit about that, how they're tracking and how they're picking up? Are they doing that through fuel sales with an average miles per gallon estimated, or what?
We will be able to share much more about that in a future update, because we have a technical consultant team who's helping us with this work. So they are still in the preliminary sorting through the data phase. So we will be able to answer that question better in a little bit once they finish their work and we have a chance to review it. So we'll be able to answer that better in the future.
All right. Thank you, Jenna.
You want to finish?
Yeah, I was going to finish. Just one thing, like when I know we're pushing real hard towards the electrification of all of our vehicles in the state. One of the issues that has come up with that is tire wear, of all things, and the heavy particulate matter that the tire wear is creating, because it's like it's like every 10,000 miles on a Tesla, you need to replace the tires because of the amount of rubber and wear particulate, and how we're trying to figure out how to keep those heavy metals and stuff that are in the tire out of the environment. Are we starting to capture some of that data? Are we going to start looking at that as we reduce one thing, that we're increasing another, and then how we're, like, when we talk about, you know, environmental justice, I guess, how that looks?
Yeah, so I'll talk about this a little bit later in the presentation in terms of where we're at and what we're doing, but the county has never really done any climate change work. So we are starting from essentially zero information, right, collected specifically for the county. And so we're starting with a greenhouse gas inventory, which is a fairly standard, it's like a data collection accounting process. And so,
Charlie.
Sorry.
Okay, I lost my train of thought. So we're starting from some pretty, but it's going to be pretty high level, like where are the major sources of pollution? So I'm not sure in this project we're going to get as detailed as something like you were just mentioning, but we're going to focus on, okay, where are the major sources of pollution? What are things that relate to comprehensive planning that we actually can impact, because there's a whole lot of things too that are not really in the county's purview, right? Like the utilities have their own emissions targets and things like that. So we'll have to sort through what is actually, relevant to the county and where we can make improvements. But I don't think it's going to get so detailed that we're looking at your example with tires.
This is Commissioner Baker again, and what you just said and what Commissioner Haroon had talked about was one of my other questions I failed to ask. So we're talking about now we have to figure out where all these people, like how many miles they're going to drive. Does that affect how we're going to zone and plan in this next comprehensive plan, right, to get the communities closer together, even though we, like what Commissioner Haroon was saying, that they're moving out because they can't afford it, but then they have to drive all the way in for work. Are we trying to figure out how to do our employment lands zoned in a way where they can be working closer to where they're living?
So I think this is Jose Alvarez with community planning. There are multiple chapters in the comp plan that are affected by this legislation, land use being one of them, transportation being the other. So I think the idea of trying to have things more located in a way that reduces the amount of distance you have to travel or allows for alternative transportation modes to be more successful in the county are some of the things that we're going to be looking at. And as we get into more of the transportation, there's specific targets that are included within this that's looking at level of service standards that aren't just for road building and trying to encourage other modes of transportation. So that'll come as part of that. But yes, there'll be an impact on other parts of the planning.
Okay, how about I keep going and then we'll break again for more questions. So I am going to talk through some of the key things we've done so far. So we've basically had a year of trying to process what the legislation says and then making a plan to figure out how we're going to do this in a very crunched timeline. Like, this is the kind of project we wish we had more time for. So we are needing to move very fast. Let's go to the next slide. So in November of last year, the County Council approved a public participation plan for our work on the climate element. So some of you may know, a public participation plan it's basically a document that shares information with the public on opportunities for engaging in the process for a particular project. That includes, when and how they can submit comments and testify before you and the County Council, as well as the other engagement that staff will be doing along the way. The three main goals of the public participation plan for this work were to communicate clearly, to prioritize equity, and to inform, consult, involve, and collaborate with the public. I guess it was late last summer, we hired JLA Public Involvement to conduct some preliminary stakeholder interviews to just get a feel for major issues on the topic in the county and to provide recommendations on our approach to public engagement for this project. And so our public participation plan is largely informed by that work that they did for us. So a lot of different, engagement tools and techniques are outlined in this document, but I'm going to highlight a few things. So I'm going to talk about the advisory groups that we set up. We have three advisory groups helping us with this work. And then we also have some additional public engagement planned that we've already started. So I want to give you an update on those items. So let's go to the next slide. Okay, so the first of our three advisory groups, we are calling our community advisory group. We have 20 members who are appointed by the county manager to develop consensus-based goal and policy recommendations for the climate element that will ultimately be put into our proposed new climate element that will come before you and then the county council. So we held an open application process, and we were seeking people who could represent interests in all of these topic areas listed on this on the screen. So we, as I said, 20 people were appointed, and that is more than 20 things, but we have found 20 people who can cover all of those interests in the group. And we also have Councillor Belcott, who's serving as the county council liaison to the group, so can bring guidance from the council into conversations and can also relay back to the council what's going on with the group discussions. And so we've got not only folks who have a really wide range of interests participating in this group, we also have representatives from across the county, so pretty good geographic representation as well. Okay, let's go to the next slide. We have a second group called the Environmental Justice Coalition, or EJC, and this is a group where we have contracted with 15 community-based organizations in the county to help us with our community engagement work. And these groups all work with populations that are more vulnerable to climate pollution and climate impacts. Our initial outreach was to, if you can see on the slide, organizations serving culturally specific groups, minority-focused business, community development and service organizations, immigrant and refugees, the BIPOC community, older adults, youth, early child care, or education providers, serving people who identify as LGBTQ+, people living with disabilities, people who are houseless, and farm workers. And so we have, I didn't put a slide with the 15 organizations that we've hired, but if you go onto our website, we've got them all listed there, and they are representing a lot of these different vulnerable community populations in our community. In addition to helping us with community outreach, so you know they're gonna hear feedback from their communities and then help relay that feedback back into the process, they are also helping us develop an equity lens, which we'll basically be using as an environmental justice assessment tool to help evaluate policy ideas. So I mentioned this legislation says we have to be improving environmental justice. So we need a way to assess the policy ideas, you know, if they should be helping or not. Okay, let's go to the next slide. All right, our third advisory group is our partner agency team, which is it's an interdepartmental, interagency coordinating team that we've assembled, and we're really just calling on this group as needed throughout the project. So they are providing us with data when they have things that are useful for this project, and also reviewing and providing feedback on key deliverables along the way. You can see a list on the slide of everyone we invited into this group. So our cities, many county departments, the local tribe, our hospital and medical organizations, fire districts, ports. Can you go to the next slide? Several of our regional agencies, our schools, several state agencies, and utilities. So we've got a list of, I think it's about 80 people right now who we have started to call on as needed, and they'll be doing, when we do have some draft policies, we'll be helping us vet those and help help poke holes, you know, in those ideas as we move through the process. Okay, let's go to the next slide. All right, so those are our advisory groups. And so in addition to working with them and our Environmental Justice Coalition doing outreach into their communities, we staff are also hosting sort of general public, anyone who's interested, engagement events throughout the year. So far, we actually just wrapped up our first activity, which was a survey on severe weather. So members of the public could share examples of how they've been impacted in past severe weather events to help us think through the types of things we might want to think about when we're planning for the future where these events are more likely to be more frequent. In early summer, we're going to host a community workshop where we can report out on what we've heard so far regarding resilience feedback and also get feedback from the community on policy ideas. And then in the late summer, we will have another short survey to get community feedback on greenhouse gas reduction priorities. And then we'll follow that up in the fall with a workshop on greenhouse gas reduction and getting community feedback on policy ideas. So that'll take us through this year. And once we have all that feedback, as we get it from the community, it's going to feed back into our advisory group and working with advisory groups to get a draft climate element that will then come before you and the county council in 2025 through the adoption process. You know, we're also throughout the year doing just general comprehensive plan engagement events. So we've got some open houses coming up, for instance. So we are there and can talk to people about climate change at those types of events as well. And then we have monthly meetings with our two main advisory groups, you know, and we have a public comment period at those as well. So there's a lot of opportunity for the public to engage if they want to on this project. It's not every day you have to add a new, you know, chapter into your comp plan. So we're doing a lot around this topic. Okay, let's go to the next slide. All right, so that's our where we're at in the process. We are now meeting regularly with our advisory groups and starting to do public engagement. In terms of like the substance and what we've covered so far, let's go to the next slide. For the resilience sub-element, we do have another work session with you on June 20th. So we'll go into more detail at that time. But so far, basically, we have been working with our technical consultant team. We've been reviewing the climate projections for natural hazards in Clark County to figure out which ones are applicable here and which ones are expected to worsen here in the future. We are also talking with people about their experiences with various hazards and impacts that they have experienced. So we've done this both again with our advisory groups and then also through the survey out in the community to get feedback on those types of things. And we are just starting to talk about goal and policy ideas with our community advisory group and Environmental Justice Coalition. So they've done a brainstorming exercise so far. We're now taking that and trying to, you know, consolidate and summarize what they've shared. And then we're going to do an iterative process with them to come up with any other goals and then start to think about policy ideas that might help accomplish those goals. So that's where we're at with resilience. Go to the next slide. And then let's go one more. For the greenhouse gas reduction sub-element, we have a greenhouse gas inventory for the unincorporated county. It's underway. We are expecting to have those results by your June 20th meeting, so we'll be able to share back what we have learned from that with you. And otherwise, we're basically on hold with greenhouse gas reduction until we have that data. So it's taken us several months to do, but we are nearing the end of that work. And so then we'll be able to start talking about what are we going to do about it. Okay, next slide. All right, I'm going to wrap up just by looking at a schedule. I know I've been talking a lot. So right now we're in the spring of 2024. So for the resilience sub-element, we are wrapping up that background research and analysis work and shifting into our summer work of identifying priorities, criteria, and starting to develop a goal and policy list. We're hoping to get pretty far along with that by early summer so that we can then start taking what comes out of that work and start drafting that sub-element in the fall so that it's ready for the adoption process next year. For the greenhouse gas reduction sub-element, as I mentioned, we've been focused on the inventory, which is our main baseline research and analysis. We also have to look at the VMT data and look a bit closer. But once we have that, later this summer, we'll start to identify targets and priorities and criteria for developing policies for that sub-element. In the fall and into early next year, we'll really dig into fleshing out those goals and policies and then draft that sub-element so it also is ready to go through the adoption process. Okay, so that's what we have. I'm going to stop talking and I'm glad to take more questions.
This is Commissioner Baker. So the starting with the last thing first was really the greenhouse gas inventory. So you said we have been working on that for the last few months. Now, how do we quantify the different seasons? Because I would imagine our greenhouse gases change over time. Like we drive more during the summer, we heat more during the winter. What's the matrix for deciding what is our base level? Because this would probably be pretty essential. Like this is a very big part of where we are. Like, we have to get this right, and because we can't go above it, I would imagine, once we start this process. So how do we actually get that baseline? Can you explain that process a little bit more?
Yeah, and so again, we're working with consultants who do this all the time, who are experts in this. So I am not an expert in greenhouse gas inventories, but there's like a set of protocol that they follow on how it's essentially accounting. But we do it, it's for a year. So we are, our greenhouse gas inventory is for the year, we're using 2022. Because it is, it's the most recent year we can get a complete data set for, essentially. So the seasonality will get rolled up because it'll be a full year. So, like I said, it's not going to be that detailed, right? It'll be higher level.
You answered my question, because I was thinking, how could you get all the information if you're only doing 3 months, but you were going on back on a data set from 2022? All right, thank you.
So, you know, we've been getting data from the utilities and looking at, you know, yeah, anyway, all the various sources.
So that's 2022. We're going to be adopting this baseline in 2025 or whatnot. Will we account, like, are we trying to go from 2022 levels, or are we going to extrapolate to 2025 levels when we do this calculation? My thought is, like, I would like to see us have the highest. So when we add all these 25% of population, we have an actual baseline.
Yeah, so the baseline gives us just a benchmark, right? We will need to set targets, you know, so we'll come up with what we're aiming to be at by 2045. And so we'll pick.
So where do we establish the baseline at? Is it at the 2022 levels, or is it at extrapolating? Because we're analyzing 2022. Is that where the baseline is, or is it going to be at 2025?
Right. It's the baseline we're at. It's kind of like with population, where we know by 2045 there'll be 200,000 more people, even though it includes 2023 and it includes the years before we get to 2025. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a good analog or not, but the ultimate goal is 2050 net zero.
Well, I got,
right?
I got that
so,
part.
So it almost doesn't really matter
what
your baseline is.
It matters a great deal, because if our baseline is lower if we add all these people, we have to work harder to get the gases reduced. And so that actually is really important. And so I just want to make sure that we have a full understanding of what we're trying to do here.
Yes, understood. No, that is correct. So yes, there will be the extra years that we do need to account for.
Okay.
With the ultimate goal of getting to net zero.
Right, you got it.
This is Zeldin. Is there a list of the sources of the greenhouse gases that you're collecting from, like agricultural, industrial, residential, or is there a list that we can see?
Yeah, so when we meet with you again in June, we'll share all of that.
Okay.
So off the top of my head, you know, transportation is one of the big buckets, and then we've got energy and building sector, so basically stationary energy sources. We have, let's see, waste is in the bucket as one of the sectors. I'm now blanking. I feel like there's 7 or 8 different buckets that we're looking at. So I'm not doing very well off the top of my head, but I can also pull up the list and share it with you as well, if that's helpful.
Yes, I would like to see that.
Okay.
Thank you.
So Jenna, Brian Halbert here. Of the survey, the climate, let me make sure I get that right. How many respondents did you have? Is it still open, and will you be aggregating that so we can kind of see what the county residents responded to?
Yeah, so we did just close it this past Sunday. We had over 200 responses just from our outreach. We are So getting additional survey responses from some other sources. So we actually had there was a class at WSU Vancouver for their final project who each of the students went and got, you know, feedback from five people. So they're going to give us another 100 survey responses. And then many of our environmental justice coalition members are also using the survey with their community groups. So it's going to go up a bit more from what we have so far. But yeah, I think over the next couple of weeks, we'll be working on reviewing it and compiling it and are glad to share that back.
This Commissioner Huron. Just along those lines on the survey, are we weighting our people groups that we're getting the survey from? Are we looking at the community as a whole? Or if you have a bunch of college students and they go grab five friends each, you're going to get a real high representation of that population. You know, if you have a survey group of on there said multiple environmental justice organizations are on that, and they go out to their groups, you're going to get a very weighted response of that. Are we mindful of who we're getting them from and who they're represented, so we have a better community understanding and totality? Or is it just being, I guess, like, I don't want to see the data skewed because I think it's important data, you know, when we're looking at those.
Yeah, well, I think when we do surveys, so we're not trying to do like a statistically significant survey. So, you know, it's more I would consider it more a questionnaire and a way to collect feedback. But yeah, we do have like demographic questions, which people can choose to fill out or not. So, you know, how much we know about the age of someone who filled it out, for instance, will depend on whether or not they chose to provide that data to us. Yeah, and I think the main thing we're looking for is, you know, what is it that we're hearing? It's less, not necessarily how many people, right, said something, right? But what are the key things that we are hearing and seeing from the information provided,
sure.
Right? Because it's like any public comments, you're trying to like process what does this mean? So we're happy to share what we do know about those who provided feedback.
Okay, so my next question is, can you give me an example of environmental justice? I hear that term a lot, and it feels difficult for me to put my head around of like, well, what is it, you know, this person is experiencing environmental justice or not experiencing environmental justice. How, like, what does that look like? Can you give me an example?
Yeah, so, and I was just glancing at the definition to see if it had, like, you know, if it has specific term, you know, but if you look at the definition, it's sort of got two pieces. There's a process piece to environmental justice, and there's an outcomes piece to environmental justice. So the process piece is that you need to fairly treat everybody and meaningfully involve people, no matter what their race and background and so forth, right? So there's the how you do your work, that is a piece of it as well. And then the outcome side of it is that you're supposed to be addressing, I'm just going to read from here, disproportionate environmental and health impacts in all laws, rules, and policies with environmental impacts by prioritizing vulnerable population and overburdened communities and the equitable distribution of resources and benefits. So let me give an example of what that might be. So let's say we end up with a policy for our resilience sub-element on, you know, something about planting more trees in the county because we know shade can help cool areas, so heat wouldn't be as severe. That policy could be written more equitably if we added some language on maybe where to prioritize planting those trees. So perhaps in communities where there are fewer trees, for instance, might be a way to help, and those tend to be in communities, right, that are lower income, for instance, that have less community infrastructure in them. So we could write that policy in a way that is benefiting those neighborhoods by prioritizing them in the policy versus just writing a blanket policy that, I mean, trees are great everywhere, you could argue, but we could write it to be more equitable by adding just some specific language like that. So that's one example, but a lot of it has to do with the, you know, who are you benefiting, who are you harming, or where are you adding benefit, or where is the harm being caused in a with a policy.
Okay, so on a practical standpoint, you would take trees. If you were in a called a lower income neighborhood that has fewer trees because they have a lot more apartments, right? You would then require the apartment developer to put in 4 times as many trees in the poor neighborhoods versus if they built in a wealthier suburb and they wouldn't have to have as many trees. Is that kind of the, what I'm actually trying to grind down is like, what is, because I understand the concepts, right? But they're very conceptual. And I'm trying to understand the practicality of like, how do we know when we're meeting these goals? Is ultimately my question. Like, how do we, and I kind of get to the like, the prioritize equity. It kind of falls under the environmental justice. And then ultimately my question is, what are the metrics for a functional equity lens, which is basically just, I mean, it should be honestly some kind of check sheet that we can go, we're absolutely hitting these goals because problem solution. And I know a lot of this is high level right now, and we're trying to work down to that. I guess my comment or my concern or my goal would be that as we're developing this, we're actually developing actionable tools that when we come back next year or, you know, and then as we're boiling this down, that we know exactly what we're our goals are and then what does that look like. So, and you know, and how we're accounting for that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. And the guidance that we're following from the Department of Commerce, right, is they are recommending that we essentially come up with, they're calling it a multi-criteria prioritization exercise, but it's essentially a way to score, right, and evaluate policies in different categories. So that is one way that, right, where we'll need to come up with what are the questions we need to answer. You know, that our equity lens, right, is likely going to be a series of questions that you try to answer for a policy, and then you can evaluate. So we basically will create a matrix for ourselves of some kind so that we can show you, okay, here's what we asked, here's how we rated it. We can explain why, you know, so that we can see sort of what policies are helping improve amount of adjustments or not. So, but yet I think you're right in that a lot of like that, it's conceptual, right? Right. And it's not like you can't point to a number or, you know, something very,
I'm looking for measurable,
right.
I think is what I'm, what yeah. I'm really, you know, looking for, you know, kind of that. And then, yeah. And it really will, like, for me, I get, you know, we'll, as we kind of get more down into the weeds, when we start looking at carbon footprint and things like that, that we look at, well, if we're bringing on a bunch of new, you know, new electric vehicles, what's the initial carbon footprint of every new electrical vehicle? Because it's much, much higher than a gas vehicle on the initial carbon footprint for manufacture of those. And then that we're balancing all of those elements and not just, you know, going, you know, green is good, and if it's green, it's go, you know, and not capturing all of that. So, because we're being asked to be very nuanced in this, because we actually have a goal of you know, net zero. So I really want to have actionable items there. So that's, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Oliver. Commissioner Karun, that's going to come up in a form of targets, goals, and when you talk about measurable, over time we are going to be looking at how well are we doing in meeting that target or in that goal. You're looking at, okay, we're going to reduce our greenhouse whatever by 2050. If that's our target, we got to begin to say, okay, over time how are we doing and where do we need to make an adjustment? You know, for example, if we have, if we identify some areas where we can say it's a heat desert, as an example, it could be that we can adopt a three ordinance that is applied uniformly, not just selective areas, if you will. So those are some of the, a good example that we can say over time, here's what we are doing. And when you talk about resiliency, very similar to areas that are prone to flooding, for example, what type of new development activities that we can put in place to minimize that when it occurs. Because you know it's gonna be costly for some folks, you know, whether their house are flooded or whatever the case may be, it may cost them more to replace or maybe not to rebuild. We are seeing that in some areas where you have, you know, extensive flooding, and yes, FEMA comes in and do a couple of things and you rebuild and over time it floods again. So there's gonna be some mechanism. I'm not saying that that happens here often, but the experience we can rely to was the, I believe it was the 1996 flood that we have here that was very extensive and it did impact some areas. That's why some folks have flood insurance and other things, and we look at over time, how do we amend our flood insurance or in flood maps to mitigate the future impact when that occurs. Those are some of the things you put in place that over time you begin to monitor what is happening. It's not gonna be just over time, we just switch and everything will be magically be okay. The same is true when you talk about fire. You know, you're going to come up with some target, some mechanism, some policies. You know, you don't have to perhaps build in fire-prone areas, or how far can you build and when do you trim your trees and brush? Ticks are some of the things that help you when you try to do resiliency and be addressing those type of issues. That's where this is gonna come up. It's not gonna be just over time, everything will work out okay. But you set some target and then begin to put some mechanism in place as to how you're going to continue to meet that goal. In terms of vehicle mile traveled, as Jose was talking earlier, that's gonna come out of the transportation setting standards and trying to see how we meet those standards. It could mean encouraging different mode of transportation, things that we don't used to do before. Those are some of the things that we can put in place that could help us meet that target in the future. This is new, and we happen to be the first counties among the 2025 adopters that will come up with a climate element, you know, but this is now going applicable to all the counties in the state that are doing GMS. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Some of this data, as Jenna was saying, is gonna come from WatchDOT. Some of them are going to come from the consultant that we hired who are also talking to utilities. We really don't have a lot of stationary, what I may call stationary polluters here in the county. So in that sense, we are relatively okay, but statewide, we have to do our own part to get to that state target over time.
This is Commissioner Baker. So we're planning for the next 20 years, right? So we're trying to get to 2045. And what Jenna, you pointed out to me, by 2050, we're supposed to be at net zero. So I would imagine, is there some incremental policy, like what are our goals for each year that we are trying to reduce to? And could you explain that a little
bit? Yeah, so we will need to set some interim targets. We're still waiting for the baseline data before we really talk numbers to understand, you know, pollution sources and what might be feasible at, you know, different timelines. So we will need to come up with those targets. There's also part of this legislation, there's a monitoring requirement. So every 5 years, we're gonna need to be reporting how we're doing. So the idea is we, the suggestion in the guidance is we should align our targets, like do 5-year increments so it aligns with our monitoring and reporting requirements, essentially. So we'll have to figure out what those are. So we haven't started those conversations right yet, but we'll need to come up with them.
If we set our baseline and then we have 20 years, so every 5 years we have to reduce by 25% or something like that every 5 years. And so, and one of the first slides that you had pointed out was like all the different things that are very important, like, you know, housing affordability, and there was all these requirements that these are considerations that we're trying to make, and now climate is one of those considerations. How do we weigh that we're balancing the requirement when, if we're reducing our greenhouse gases at 25% every 5 years, but then that raises housing affordability, which we already have an issue with, or quality of life, because now we can't drive anywhere, we have to ride the bus, and so that reduces our family time that we can have at the house. How do we measure that?
In other words, what is the cost?
Yeah. I think you're kind of getting at the crux of the Growth Management Act, which basically says do all of these things, don't prioritize any, and figure it out. Like, right, it's sort of written in a way to put things that maybe seem like they're contending or competing, right, and to come up with an approach. So, I mean, I will say, like, in this climate legislation, it's very clear you can't say we're not going to grow, right? They're saying you need to plan for the population growth, right? So there's an acknowledgement of that, right? And I think this legislation, it's basically pushing us on, you know, we have to do something different, right? If we keep doing the same thing that we've been doing, that's not really an option. So I'm not sure there's a clear answer, right? But I think that is essentially what we have to struggle with, right? Is the trade-offs of all these things. And I don't know if Jose, you want to add to that.
Multiple vague and conflicting values. That's how my professor at PSU described sort of comprehensive planning, and that's essentially it. It's balancing those trade-offs. I think there was, just to give some context, I think it was in one of the slides of the earlier presentations last week, where 1990 greenhouse gas emissions, I think, compared to 2020. And there was a 9% increase in this 30-year period where we doubled the population. Mm-hmm. So we've done some things, mm-hmm. and so we're just continuing to build on that. And it just seems like it's accelerated because of where we are. But so there are things that we've done, and we just need to build on those. And, I think that's what... There's going to be a lot of trade-offs in that, but that there's certain things we have to do.
Yeah.
Can you
give me some examples of the trade-offs? Like what?
So, like what you were just mentioning. Those sacrifices.
Valuing time at the house versus.
So right now, for transportation.
Yeah.
The county collects dollars. We build roads. Mm-hmm. That's what the county does. When we have a transportation system, we can't invest those dollars with C-TRAN to increase level of service. So the transit system operates at 30-minute headways. People aren't going to want to give up that amount of time. If we could get down to 10 or 15 minutes, it might be something that's attractive as an alternative. But how do we fund that?
Right.
And so when we have to look at this comprehensively, and the state's trying to push us to look at these things comprehensively and look at these level of service trade-offs, do we want to continue building roads to what, you know, the time frame? How much time do we want to spend on that? Are there other ways to do that to get people where they want to go in a more efficient manner?
So, and another question, I don't know, I don't know if this is on the right track, but like when we're planning for like trees and whatnot, so they essentially, like any kind of vegetation, just captures gases, carbon and whatnot. Are they part of the calculus? Like if we have more trees and then, like if we can get, we can achieve some of our goals by planting more vegetation in order to accommodate some of these reductions that we're trying to get to?
Yeah, so
that's one option.
Yeah, so when we have the numbers, it'll be easier to sort of see the relative impact of sequestration of, you know, with vegetation, for instance. It can help some. My understanding is it's not quite at the same scale as the pollution sources, so we can't, like, solve our problem just by planting trees. Yes, that is something that we can look at and consider.
So when we get further along down the line, I would imagine you are going to be able to present to us the plan. Okay, these are where we are with the greenhouse gases, and this is, I just focusing on that just because that seems to be easier for me to talk about. So we're going to have a plan. Okay, this is where we're at with greenhouse gases. We're doing a comp plan for 2040 till 2045. This is where we are. We would like to be in 2045, and these are the things that we want to try to implement in that time frame. Is that the plan? And then we'll have a discussion about that at that time.
Sorry. Yes.
Like I said earlier, it will come in a form of strategy, policies. That's how this will come about. And then whether it's a target that we set, then we're going to be able to come up, how do we, or how are we going to move into, what action do we take to implement that going forward? That is what is going to be really the work of the various committees. They're going to be making those recommendations and setting those goals consistent with the guidelines from Commerce and also consistent with the bill itself. And that's what will be coming before you in a form of a chapter outlining those type of target and goals.
Now, this is obviously a very complicated undertaking. I completely understand, and I understand you guys are doing. When they say, hey, okay, you have to plan for climate impacts and resiliency and all that stuff, do they give you the budget to plan for these things? Because there seems like there's a lot of studying that needs to happen. There's a lot of data that needs to be going to make these assumptions. I mean, is that part of, I mean, because when I was listening to the county council meeting adopting the allocation and whatnot, they were going back to some of the assumptions that were made prior to, and right, and so what we're talking about here is a lot of assumptions and a lot of the things that we do, we assume that it will make this impact. How do we get the data to make good decisions so we, in 3 years from now, we're going, oh, we've made some poor assumptions, or maybe we didn't have all the information. Can you explain some of that process for me?
Yeah, so one of the reasons the Department of Commerce produces a guidance document is they sort of outline a proposed approach to do this work. And part of that is citing credible, they tell us what are considered credible resources. So, right, this has to be based on things that are considered credible. So the Department of Commerce provides one pathway on saying, if you look at these resources for your information, that is considered credible. So so that's sort of one piece, is that, you know, these assumptions, like we can do a little modeling with the greenhouse gas on the projected impact it could have, right? That kind of thing, but it still has to be based on really sound approaches that have been vetted. So that's one piece of it.
Do we have the budget to?
Oh, and the budget piece.
Like, if we have the Department of Commerce, they have their data, and they're willing to give it to us free of charge. Do we have a plan or a budget to get other data that maybe might offer a different opinion of the Department of Commerce, that so we can kind of weigh the two? Or is it just what the state is put out, is that the data that we're going with?
So we have a grant. The Department of Commerce did give us a grant to do our planning work for this project. So that is how we've been able to hire technical consultants and facilitators who are helping us with our advisory groups. So we do have funding to do this planning work. There is no funding for the implementation of it at this point in time. Right now, it's just for the planning. You know, so things like cost and feasibility of implementing things will be something we'll need to consider.
And that will be part of the cost. What you just said there is, it was really important, I thought, because with some of this plan, will we have an estimate on cost of what our policies might be?
We will. So I mentioned we're going to do this multi-criteria mm-hmm. analysis. So we'll work with our community advisory group and Environmental Justice Coalition to hone in on the criteria to use. So cost may be one of them. Mm-hmm. I imagine it will be, but we haven't gotten there yet. So, so that is something we can consider as we're looking at possible options and evaluating if they're, they seem like a good idea or not.
All right, thank you so much.
So I wanted to follow up with a question I had previously about the sources of the greenhouse that you're doing an inventory of, and I want to know what the sources are, but also will give us in some detail on what method was used on each of those sources to estimate the greenhouse, you know, because this is vitally important that we know where our baseline is. And so I think we have to have a pretty good understanding on how those numbers were generated. Is that okay?
I think so. And some of this data is going to be secondary data coming from, for example, the utilities themselves.
I agree. But given instance, if you pull the data from an agriculture and say, well, the typical farm in Pennsylvania has this kind of emissions. Well, Pennsylvania may have a separate whole environment different than ours. And so is that really credible? So I'd like to see that kind of data.
Right, and that's why we hired folks that do this type of work to also help us to get the reliable data. There are some that will come from the state. I mentioned WatchDOT. We have Southwest Washington Air Quality. You know, they have how they measure theirs that they could also let us know. Sometimes, as you know, they say, oh, maybe during summer, there is air quality advisory that comes from the Southwest Washington Air Quality. So they have the way of measuring things. So we'll rely on whatever data that we get from
as
them.
As long as we see on these sources of
yes.
Yeah, so we use this method for measuring for this one and this one and this
yes.
one.
Yes.
Yes.
We'll do our
best. I know that's a fair amount of detail, but I'm interested in it. And,
sure.
and even if it comes out with a paper ahead of time, like what the research paper is saying, this is how we did this.
Sure.
Yep.
I'll read
it. So our consultants are doing that, and it's also our documentation of using best available science, right? Like we need to document the methodology we used so that we can show our work. So that is coming. The report is being written as we speak. So, but in terms of the categories, and these are the large categories. We'll have more specifics to share with you at our future presentation. So we have stationary energy, transportation, waste and wastewater, industrial processes and product use, agriculture, forestry, and land use, and upstream impacts of community-wide activities. So those are the big categories.
This is Commissioner Haroon. I agree with my fellow commissioners. I'm going to be looking for real high specificity on data, on costs, on things like that. So when we're interfacing with our consultants, and I know community-wide, it's really important to like show your work. So I would really encourage that. And then also putting hard numbers to stuff. So when we go to a net zero house, like, okay, we're going to make all the houses net zero. I would like to see a dollar amount associated with a net zero house. So, you know, reach out to the building community and say, okay, so to create a net zero house, it's an additional $150,000 per unit, right? Or whatever that number is. Because some of those things, so if we're going to make everybody, or we're going to get increase C-TRAN ridership, but C-TRAN ridership costs $8 to $12 per trip per person, but fares are only $2, you know, per trip. So every trip we're going to need to subsidize $8 to $10 to reach these goals. Some of those things are going to really help us identify what the low-hanging fruit is and, you know, to tackle, and then really have a metrics to look at. Well, is there a better way than getting a net zero house? Because one of our other goals is keeping housing affordable. So maybe net zero housing isn't the goal of our community. It's a different way to reach that. But without having dollars associated with that, we just are going, well, we're just now requiring all the builders to build net zero. And we've completely ignored the other part of affordable housing in the GMA. So so when we're looking at the balance, right, when we're looking at the balancing of the one versus the other, we need dollar amounts associated with each of these elements so we can actually make informed decisions. So I'm going to be pushing really hard for that kind of data, because otherwise it's just, well, we'll just make them do it without any consequence of, or without understanding the consequences of those actions.
Yeah, what I would say, Commissioner, is that we may not have a cost of what it would take to get to a net zero house. What I would say is that there are other components of this bill. I know that the legislature have passed some energy building code and requiring the state building efficiency, whatever it's called, to come up with some new rules. So that's going to be part of where that information may come from. There are even some utility companies are encouraging folks on what practices they have to do to lower their own energy usage. And sometimes you get your own monthly report of your energy usage, for example, coming from your utilities. So when the state comes out with this new building code, which some, to my understanding, are being challenged, but we will know until we know what that new building requirement and efficiency is. It's only when those are in place and we start seeing people doing that, will we be able to really get to what will be the true cost of doing X, Y, and Z. This work is just to get us to say, okay, what is our target and how do we get that? It's going to be a combination of some regulations, some other practices.
I had a follow-up. This is Commissioner Baker again. So when we talked about greenhouse gases, and then you had mentioned employment, and we've talked a little bit about, okay, we're going to add 25% more people, and they'll be driving around, and those gas emissions or whatever. Do we have an idea of like the type of employment infrastructure that we're trying to get, what kind of industries that we're bringing in here, and the impact of said industries would be to our greenhouse gas targets? Like, so I work in the heavy industrial sector, and I fix paper mills and steel mills and stuff like that, and they have a high energy use and they have big carbon footprint, but they provide good paying jobs. We have our 100,000 or 90,000 jobs that we are trying to get employment for, whatever that number was, in the employment allocation for the county. Do we have an idea of the impact that those new jobs would have on our greenhouse gas goals?
I don't think specifically, but I think what the projections we got from the Employment Security Department are in different industrial sectors. So those are broken out by the different industrial sectors,
and
that's what the projection was
Okay. Based on,
huh? And when we do our comprehensive plan, do we have an idea of like what kind of employment we're looking for? Like, what are we planning for? Is that, do we get that far down in the weeds? This is my first time doing this, so I just want to understand the process there.
Yeah, I don't think we get to that down really detailed. The only information we get is from the Employment Department security in terms of future job in construction, in government, in other retail and so forth. That's how we, that's the type of data that we get from them in terms of their forecast. In the last, I would say 5-10 years, you hear communities saying we want high tech or low tech industries or green industries, for example. It is the role of the, let's say, economic development agency like CREDC that goes out to recruit folks that are coming to our community and then encouraging those that are here to grow and expand. So we don't get that too detailed in terms of what type of industry do we want to attract. That's, as you know.
Do we get to the point where, like, maybe an employer wants to have a green or light industrial set, and it doesn't necessarily, it would impact our greenhouse emissions goals? Do we not approve like a potential employer for like zoning or something like that? I mean, is that part of the calculus that we're talking about with, say, someone, SEH wants to expand and that it has X amount of impact on our greenhouse gases, but we can't afford that in because of our population and where we are with greenhouse gas reductions? I mean, do we allow them to expand, or we say, sorry, we can't do that? I mean, is that part of the calculation, or how does that work?
I don't think we will tell them that you cannot expand, because as you know, some of these industries will be taking some action to reduce their own footprint. So it's upon them to be able to put some mechanism in place to reduce their footprint. We cannot say you cannot expand.
You just can't produce any more greenhouse gases.
You have to, if the technology is there, you have to do something to reduce your footprint. It's up to them to do so.
Okay.
And don't know whether the government will mandate that or whether they will take that action on themselves. It's likely that in the future there may be new technologies that would enable them to capture their own emission, whatever. So, but those are some of the things that the companies will be doing. Some of them are beginning to do that gradually. All of this is going to be cost and technology driven, but we cannot say to ACH you can no longer expand. They may be doing other things to reduce their footprint or their energy use.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Commissioner Baker, I was going to throw out that Oliver already did. The CREDC spends a lot of time looking at industries in our community and recruiting for those industries. And you're probably familiar with them, but that seems like their role. And I'm glad to see that they're on the partner advisory teams here too, so they will be speaking into that.
Yeah, I was because I know all these interagencies have their own little spheres where they're focusing on, and I was just trying to focus on the planning department's part of that one, where they're working on getting new industry or whatnot, and how do we as a planning plan for it.
Yeah, so they're bringing in new industry. We're saying, no, you can't be here because you're
that was my question.
Capital.
Yeah. Thank you.
Just a comment. You know, people will come up and say, we don't want heavy polluting industries in our backyard or in our community. You hear that as well, for whatever it's worth.
I'm not trying to argue in one way or the other. I'm just trying to get the process down.
Yes. I think that's all we have. This is informational. The only thing I will add is that for quite some time, the Washington State Legislature have been struggling to get this bill passed. They finally did, and here we are. And we have to comply in writing a climate chapter, and we'll see how this goes in the future in terms of some of that funding may come from the state as they invest in, you know, climate reduction, whether it is done through other funding mechanism, I don't know, but it's likely that some of this will take new technology expense and cost in order to get us to whatever target we set.
So Oliver, I was just going to back up and compliment you on the May 7th County Council meeting. I was listening to that also, and it seemed like the vote was on the brink of disaster around noon, and your words to the councilors seemed to bring it right back around to help them focus on the on where they needed to be. And I couldn't hear, I had to leave before the 3:30 resumption of that discussion, but did hear subsequently that they did pass it and passed it unanimously. And I think that, yeah, that was it. The vote was close.
Thank you, Planning Commission. Albert, I think it was what I will call a concerted effort by our city partners, and I sincerely give the credit to the council. They listened to our city partners. Now the real work begins, and I also thank our legal counsel who was there and the county manager. They all play the role, but I give the credit to my staff and to the cities. Like I said, it wasn't, the cities came to the table and they listened to your concern. There's some city that would prefer method A. There's some city that preferred method B because it gives them credit on what they have already been doing. But they came to a compromise, and that's all I can say. It's a concerted effort, and they gave up a lot to come to that compromise. You know, I mean, I give them the credit.
Hey, we haven't heard from Carl or Mark in quite a while. We want to make sure we don't leave you out.
No, I'm fine. That was a great presentation. I think there's a lot of this that is the unknown. So I think that we can kind of dilly-dally around it. I've been here many times where we get a bill or a mandate, and I think sometimes just a little wait, let it percolate, and then we'll get more information from both staff and legal, and then they'll give us a better direction to proceed. So I've kind of just, I just want to listen and take what the state's given us, and then something like this is a big nut to crack.
As Commissioner Berthold, I feel the same way as Carl. You know, it's just about every question we asked, Jenna had to say, well, we're working on it. Jose, I like the way the definition your instructor had about the plans. I mean, yeah, it's trying to get a realistic result out of what appear to be unrealistic expectations. So I'm anxious to see how this will come out. And that's about all I've got.
Carl, are you going to close us?
Yeah, with that said, does anybody have anything else? Hearing none, let's adjourn.
Yeah, that reminds me, are you all coming for Sonia's retirement?
Is it Thursday?
Yes, May 23rd. Yes.